The wrecking ball of right-wing authoritarianism is swinging right through Congress and coming directly at the freedoms of the press and the people right now.
Better watch out for them big balls. They're coming to get you.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it is not.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADRM, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe each and every day on the internets, on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most, but not all, of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Now, in our 22nd year of troublemaking and muckraking, though, I will note bradblog.com was out for much of the day morning, so if you tried to get there, my apologies that you couldn't. It is back up now as we go to air. Someone on Blue Sky, when I mentioned that, said, oh no, did big balls get you?
Oh, and of course, what are they referring to?
You tell me.
The Doge Bros.
That's right.
Of Elon Musk. One of them, his online handle as a teenager, was that.
Well, as a teenager, he is still a teenager.
I
believe Big Balls is still 19 years old, but now he's heading up the Defense Department or something like
Not
that.
Not old enough to drink, but old enough to root around in the codes for the Treasury payment system.
Yeah, well, you got to have big balls to do that, apparently. All right. Hey, if you can bear with us long enough today, I will be joined by a guest to discuss a story that has, well, almost nothing at all to do with Donald Trump.
What?
I know. Though it does have to do with Republicans trying to steal elections, very much in the style of Donald Trump, and even taking from his perhaps literal playbook. And what I believe is the only still ongoing challenge to an election from November of 24. That's coming up in a bit. But first, well, we got to start here. Tip of the hat to David Kurtz of Talking Points Memo, who at the end of his morning memo newsletter today notes, quote, "We live in the dumbest timeline."
True.
That was a response to a Blue Sky post from the great legal journalist Anna Bauer, who has been a guest on this show. She noted that Republican Congressman Buddy Carter of Georgia has introduced a bill in the U.S. House of Representatives to, quote, authorize the president to enter into negotiations to acquire Greenland and, ready for this, to rename Greenland as Red, White, and Blue Land. Seriously.
Yeah.
The dumbest timeline indeed, said Georgia's Congressman Carter in announcing the news of his dumb bill being introduced in the GOP-controlled U.S. House. Quote, America is back and will soon be bigger than ever with the addition of red, white, and blue land. That is fantastic. I am thinking of celebrating tonight with a nice hot order of freedom fries. I don't know about you. Anyway, welcome to the Bradcast, where we don't spend much time focusing on or even worrying about most of Trump's dumbest promises and threats, unless it really looks like he might go through with them, and or that they might cause real trouble for Americans or others. acquiring Greenland for now, anyway, is one of those dumb things I think we can afford to largely ignore in favor of more immediate and actual concerns and threats against our constitutional democratic republic. Same goes for Trump's threats to invade the Panama Canal, magically make Canada the 51st state, even if his announcement that he will be ethnically cleansing Gaza to make way for his luxury hotels in the Red Sea, for now anyway, is not worth getting too worked up about, I think, at least not when Trump is busy doing real actual harm to Americans and to the U.S. constitutional order as we know it right now. On the other hand, while Trump cannot annex Panama or Canada or Greenland, I'm sorry, red, white, and blue land, with a stroke of his pen, he is arguably able to rename the Gulf of Mexico as the Gulf of America, at least, sort of, at least here in America. The rest of the world does not have to recognize that, however, and even though Alaskans and Native Americans and the two Republican U.S. senators from Alaska all oppose it, apparently a president is allowed to rename a mountain that was once called Mount McKinley after a president who never stepped foot in Alaska. And then later officially renamed by President Obama as Denali, as per its 10,000-year-old native name. A president is apparently allowed to come in and name that back to Mount McKinley again for reasons that nobody really knows, other than it was that, you know, that black president who restored the original native name to the tallest peak in North America, and that, of course, must be undone. But because Denali, or Mount McKinley, is entirely inside U.S. borders, apparently the renaming is seen as legitimate, at least by the Associated Press and its style book, which is used by many news outlets around the world as a guide. As explained in an announcement from AP on January 23rd, so that's 3 days after Trump signed this proclamation for this renaming of Denali. AP writes, President Trump signed an executive order to revert the name of North America's tallest peak, Denali, in Alaska, to Mount McKinley. Former President Barack Obama changed the official name to Denali in 2015 to reflect the traditions of Alaska natives, as well as the preference of many Alaska residents. Trump said in his executive order that he wanted to, quote, restore the name of a great president, William McKinley, to Mount McKinley. The Associated Press will use the official name change to Mount McKinley, they write. The area lies solely in the United States, and as president, Trump has the authority to change federal geographical names within the country, wrote Associated Press, again, just after Donald Trump's inauguration back in announcement from AP on January 23, which, frankly, sounds reasonable enough. It may be stupid, but apparently Donald Trump, as president, has the authority to be stupid in this case if he wants. The AP announcement on January 23 also notes that, quote, President Donald Trump has also signed an executive order to rename the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. The body of water has shared borders between the U.S. and Mexico. Trump's order only carries authority within the United States. Mexico, as well as other countries and international bodies, do not have to recognize that name change. The Gulf of Mexico, notes AP, has carried that name for more than 400 years. The Associated Press will refer to it by its original name while acknowledging the new name that Trump has chosen. As a global news agency, they explain, that disseminates news around the world, the AP must ensure that place names and geography are easily recognizable to all audiences.
Because it's not good to induce confusion, so they're trying to make it not confusing for their foreign audiences.
The AP regularly reviews its style guidance regarding name changes, in part to ensure its guidance reflects common usage. We'll continue to apply that approach to this guideline and make updates as needed. There are other examples, they note, where the AP refers to a geographical place name by more than one name. For example, the Gulf of California is sometimes referred to as the Sea of Cortez. The U.S. government has designated that body of water as the Gulf of California, but Mexico recognizes it as the Sea of Cortez. The AP Stylebook will be updated to reflect both of these decisions, all of which sounds, as I said, quite reasonable. Even in response to Trump's dumb decisions that nobody really wanted or asked for. But it's not up to AP whether a president feels like stretching his executive muscles to feel like a big boy president or not. They just describe the news so that the world can understand what is going on. But that, apparently, that is not good enough for King Trump. King Donald. AP had to issue another announcement this week on Wednesday, following a press conference held in the Oval Office featuring Elon Musk and Donald Trump signing an executive order giving him and his Doge bros even more power over hiring and firing across the entire federal government, other than apparently at the Pentagon. In effect, Elon Musk, not Donald Trump, is now in charge of pretty much everything when it comes to running the U.S. government and staffing its executive agencies and tens of thousands of employees, etc., which kind of seems important, if only because of the billions of dollars in government contracts and enormous amounts of legal and regulatory oversight of Elon Musk's many companies, with and by various executive agencies, now presenting unprecedented conflicts of interest, having Elon Musk oversee those very agencies. Unprecedented, as Donald Trump might describe it, the likes of which nobody, in this case, literally has ever seen in the U.S. But the AP was not allowed to be there at that announcement in the White House Oval Office, along with the rest of the media, to report it on Tuesday. As AP reported after that event in another announcement with a statement from their executive editor, Julie Pace, quote, "As a global news organization, the Associated Press informs billions of people around the world every day with factual, nonpartisan journalism. Today, we were informed by the White House that if AP did not align its editorial standards with President Donald Trump's executive order renaming the Gulf of Mexico as the Gulf of America, AP would be barred from accessing an event in the Oval Office. This afternoon, AP's reporter was blocked from attending an executive order signing. It is alarming, they write, that the Trump administration would punish AP for its independent journalism, limiting our access to the Oval Office based on the content of AP's speech, not only severely impedes the public's access to independent news, it plainly violates the First Amendment. Either you report on what I want you to report the way I want you to report it, AP, or you are not welcome into the White House to cover news events. The AP announcement then links to their earlier announcement explaining the style guide updates from back in January on Denali and the Gulf of Mexico. But that's right. The two great champions of political free speech, the two pretend champions of political free speech, who claim to be supporters of the First Amendment, Donald Trump, Elon Musk, actively blocked legitimate credentialed journalists from covering an Oval Office event of actual import because they did not like how the news organization described a name change to the Gulf of Mexico that Trump is not legitimately allowed to make on his own for the globe unilaterally, and that needn't be recognized by other nations or international media outlets any more than they must begin calling Greenland red, white, and blue land. That's how your new president is fighting for you and the Constitution and the freedom of speech. Congratulations, MAGA. You guys nailed it. As historian Kevin Cruz observed on Blue Sky last night, quote, the AP must refuse to buckle to this. But more importantly, the rest of the White House Correspondents Association should back them. Boycott the press briefings until they relent, and if they refuse, walk out. There is no real use to them in any case, he says. Trump craves attention. Deny him that, and he will cave. Well, it's a good idea, but it doesn't look like the rest of the media is going to be doing that. Nonetheless, that news follows on the news last week that several well-established news organizations, including the New York Times, NBC News, Washington Post, were all being kicked out from their office space at the Pentagon that they have occupied for decades to, in the Trump administration's telling, make room in this giant facility for right-wing media outlets like Breitbart and America One News or whatever that thing is called.
Propaganda mouthpieces.
Correct. Those who are willing to lie and publish disinformation on behalf of the administration, I'll bet they call the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. Here's Maryland's Democratic congressman and constitutional law expert Jamie Raskin in a House committee hearing on Wednesday morning.
Yesterday, Donald Trump banned the Associated Press, a 179-year-old newspaper organization, from the White House because it declines to call the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. This is straight-up press censorship based on retaliatory viewpoint discrimination. Trump's DOD kicked out 8 news groups that had space in the Pentagon, but which asked skeptical questions of the new secretary, including the New York Times, NBC News, and the Washington Post, all ousted in favor of outlets willing to faithfully advance the party line of the state, like Breitbart and One American News Network.
So anyway, just another reminder that Donald Trump hates the Constitution, hates constitutional rights, and really does not support a free press or free speech, as Republicans have been pretending that they do for some time. Remember how outraged they were about censorship of people on Twitter, censorship that didn't really happen, but and Twitter, as a private company, can censor anyone they want. But yeah, when it comes to real censorship, well, crickets. And he especially doesn't like free speech when it is about his own so far disastrous second administration and the damage that his co-president Elon is helping him do to the entire country and world, much less the U.S. Constitution. The Inspector General at the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, was fired by Trump on Tuesday. A day after his office, the IG's office, released a report detailing the negative impact of the Trump administration's dramatic downsizing of the agency, which supplies billions of dollars in food and medicine and more to needy people and nations around the world, and one of the United States' best examples of best uses of soft power as opposed to hard power, as opposed to military power. Soft power. Building goodwill around the globe. And by the way, helping to keep deadly diseases like measles, monkeypox, polio, antibiotic-resistant tuberculosis, even Ebola, from ever reaching our shores. Sure, let's shut down USAID. Paul Martin, who had been USAID's Inspector General since 2023, was notified of his dismissal by email, telling him that he was terminated effective immediately on Tuesday after that one single report.
Well, you can't have anybody going in and showing how the Trump administration is destroying critical, vital programs and just tearing everything up.
The report by USAID's Office of the Inspector General, led by Martin, warned of the dangers associated with the gap in staffing as Trump and Elon Musk's Doge Bros ordered all overseas staff to come home within 30 days. And they have shuttered the agency's D.C. headquarters building, leaving a lack of oversight that may leave the agency, quote, susceptible to inadvertently funding entities or salaries of individuals associated with the U.S.-designated terrorist organization. Oops. The report from the USAID Federal Watchdog Office also described the uncertainty surrounding the waivers for life-saving assistance that were issued by Secretary of State Marco Rubio, which it said put, quote, more than $489 million of food assistance at ports in transit and in warehouse at risk of spoilage, unanticipated storage needs, and diversion, in other words, theft. More than $489 million of food assistance. That's thanks to the efficiency boys at DOGE. USAID contractors sued the Trump administration on Tuesday, asking a federal court to block implementation of Trump's funding freeze. Some of those contractors, by the way, are farmers here in the U.S. who voted for Donald Trump, who count on USAID every year for selling their surplus soybeans, wheat, sorghum, et cetera, who've just lost, about $2 billion per year. A judge stepped in last week to temporarily pause efforts to expedite evacuations for personnel overseas and to place about 2,200 staff on administrative leave. The judge also rescinded administrative leave for another 500 workers as Trump continues to lose in case after case filed against him and his administration during their radical gutting of the U.S. government during his first 3 weeks in office. But Paul Martin, the IG at USAID, was one of the few government inspectors general who was not already fired, seemingly unlawfully, during the very first week of the new Trump administration. On Wednesday, a group of 8 federal inspectors general ousted by the White House last month sued the Trump administration, claiming that their firings were carried out illegally. By dismissing the watchdogs in 2-sentence emails, the administration violated a federal laws, how quaint, requiring the administration to inform Congress with 30 days notice and provide in writing, quote, substantive rationale for the firings. That, according to the 32-page complaint filed in U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia today. The plaintiffs are 8 of the 17 Senate-confirmed inspectors general fired just 4 days into Donald Trump's term for what the White House cited as, quote, changing priorities. Yeah, well, changing priorities doesn't count as a grounds for firing, as far as I know. In any event, even if it is, they were not given the 30 days notice. They are, these IGs are seeking reinstatement to their positions, conducting oversight of waste, fraud, and abuse at the Departments of Defense, where, by the way, new Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth today announced that the hopes of our allies in Ukraine winning their war against the invading Russians is, quote, unrealistic. And he and Donald Trump, well, apparently they hope to help Russia win their war of aggression, allowing them to keep the land that they have stolen from their sovereign neighbors. That's Donald Trump's peace plan.
That's negotiation. Here, take it all.
In any event, yes, these are the IGs from the Department of Defense, Veterans Affairs, Health and Human Services. God knows what Bobby Kennedy Jr. will be doing there very soon, as he is confirmed by Republicans in the Senate at any moment now. The IG at Education, one of the departments established by Congress that Trump hopes to close down by imperial fiat, Agriculture, Labor and State, and the Small Business Administration. all huge federal agencies where apparently Donald Trump does not want anybody overseeing what he and the Doge bros are actually doing inside of them. Quote, IGs must be watchdogs, not lapdogs, says the complaint, which names as defendants the Trump-appointed leaders or acting heads of each agency. Quote, plaintiffs' purported removals have sent shockwaves and a massive chilling effect through the IG community, the suit says. They, quote, have been sent a message that nonpartisanship and truth-telling will not be tolerated. That message will have the effect of intimidating the Inspector General workforce and thus chill their critical work for the American people. Well, right. Your point is? Oh, yeah, that is the point. And the point of Trump doing away with anyone who might be able to tell the truth about his sleazy, unlawful, corrupt policies at these agencies. Appointed by Democratic and Republican presidents alike, including Trump in his first term, the group of seasoned watchdogs had decades of experience, some overseeing staffs of more than 1,000 auditors and investigators. That's right. Donald Trump fired some of the very IGs that he himself appointed the first time around. Everyone getting the message here? Big Balls is in control now. The unprecedented purge of IGs was widely viewed as clearing the way for Trump to install loyalists in the crucial roles. The system of Senate-confirmed inspectors general, by the way, at these large agencies, was established in the late 1970s. Now, why did that happen? Well, it was after the Watergate scandal. In order to conduct independent investigations and audits of federal spending and operations, and to report those findings to Congress and the public after the corrupt administration of Richard Nixon. So this is yet another post-Watergate reform, and there were a lot of them, that Congress put in place in response to that scandal, which kind of seems petty, frankly, by comparison to what Donald Trump is now doing all over the United States government. So this is another post-Watergate reform that Donald Trump is basically hoping to break and hobble and would do away with entirely if he could. After Trump in his first term fired numerous watchdogs whose work had been critical of his administration, Congress amended the Inspector General Act in 2022 in order to strengthen its safeguards on removing a federal watchdog, including the requirement to notify Congress first. That is the law. Trump is simply ignoring that law. The complaint filed on Wednesday alleges Trump still has not communicated to Congress, even now, his intention to remove the watchdogs, nor has he communicated to Congress in writing or otherwise any, quote, substantive rationale for the removal of any IG, let alone the required detailed and case-specific reasons as per the law, according to the lawsuit. His only public explanation came during a press gaggle on January 25 when he stated, quote, I don't know them, but some people thought some were unfair, some were not doing their job, and he falsely asserted that, quote, it's a very standard thing to do. No, it actually isn't. In fact, it's now unlawful. The complaint says the president did not identify the people who supposedly thought these things.
Of course he didn't.
Which IGs any such thoughts pertained to, or how the unidentified IGs supposedly were, quote, not doing their job. So, yeah, this is plainly a violation of the rule of law. But what do you expect at this point? In the days after the IGs were ousted, the administration cut off their access to government systems, collected their assigned government equipment, computers, phones, badges. arranged for them to collect personal belongings from government buildings under supervision, according to the lawsuit. Phyllis Fong, one of those inspector generals, the one at the Department of Agriculture, the USDA, continued to work nonetheless after her dismissal, quote, recognizing that her termination was not effective because it failed to comply with the IG Act's requirements, according to the complaint. But on the Monday, after her firing, quote, she returned to work as normal, as she had for over two decades, and she conducted several meetings before USDA employees cut off her access to IT systems, took possession of her computer and phone, and deactivated her badge. Message: there will be no free speech when it comes to even potential critiques of Donald J. Trump's policies, even by those mandated by Congress to do so as necessary. Got the message? Good. Free speech champion, my. All right, let's take a quick break here, and we will be happy to cover a mostly non-Donald Trump-related story for the first time in quite a while. And it happens to be a Stop the Steal election story at that. Deborah Dix Maxwell of the North Carolina NAACP joins us next for insight on what I believe is the last still sort of undecided election of 2024. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is The Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to do it. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate to make an automated monthly pledge of any amount you like, or even just a one-time only contribution to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. The fight for voting rights, civil rights, and to save our planet continues. Please help us continue that fight independently over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate right now. Go ahead, do it right now. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
What is known, and the evidence is clear, I'm not alone. This is my democracy. You won't go telling me my vote don't matter anymore.
Yeah.
And is not worth fighting for.
Kind of good to hear that song again for some strange reason today.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Last November, as you may recall, Donald Trump narrowly won one of the most evenly divided swing states in the nation, the great state of North Carolina. But Republicans lost pretty much every other race on the statewide ballot, from governor to lieutenant governor to attorney general, etc., with Democrats taking all of those seats and, as we've reported, Republicans during the lame duck session of the state legislature attempting to remove as much power from those Democratic state officials as they could, because Republicans really, really don't seem to like democracy much at all anymore. In any event, the Republicans in November also lost a statewide race for a state Supreme Court seat. Going into those elections, Republicans held a 5-2 majority on the state's high court, as Justice Allison Riggs, one of the court's two Democrats, was running against Republican Judge Jefferson Griffin in hopes of retaining her Supreme Court seat. Well, she won the election. But the race against Griffin was very close. And after three different types of recounts following the election, the State Board of Elections certified Riggs' victory over Griffin by an incredibly narrow 734 votes out of more than 5.5 million votes cast statewide last November. But a win is a win. And so Justice Riggs retained her seat on the high court. At least she thought she had. The losing Republican candidate, Jefferson Griffin, continues to challenge that election in both state and federal court. And as I understand it, the Republicans on North Carolina's high court are refusing to recognize Riggs as the rightful winner of the seat, even though the victory has been audited and or recounted three times and certified by the state board of elections and, I believe, the state's Democratic governor. Griffin is arguing that he should have won the election, or at worst, that it should be rerun, because he claims in what appears to be the otherwise unused playbook planned for Donald Trump in the state had he lost in North Carolina last year, that more than 66,000 voters in the state voted illegally somehow, even though they didn't know it, with Griffin arguing that those voters should not have been able to have their votes counted at all in the first place and should be tossed out now somehow. Now, most of those ballots, he claims, were cast by voters whose voter registration records lacked either a driver's license number or the last four digits of their Social Security number. Now, that could be the case, for example, if the voters were registered before the law required that information, or simply due to clerical errors on behalf of election officials. Other ballots Griffin once disqualified were cast by thousands of military or overseas voters who did not provide copies of photo ID when mailing in their ballots. That's right, you heard me right. Republicans want to toss out thousands of military votes, even though I'm old enough to remember when they were infuriated by even the possibility of such a thing in other close elections, like the presidential contest back in 2000 in the great state of Florida. But here, they don't seem to care anymore, even though, as I understand it, state law does not require overseas absentee voters to include photo IDs when sending in their ballots. And the Republican Griffin is also challenging hundreds of overseas voters who have never lived in the U.S., even though they are American citizens, born of American parents. But, you know, disenfranchising lawful voters in order to win elections or actually steal them by any means necessary is kind of Republicans' thing these days. When you hear Republicans shouting, "Stop the steal," you should probably think, "Start the steal," because that's usually exactly what they are attempting to do these days, it seems. Justice Riggs is fighting for the case to move ahead in federal court, where she has argued that disenfranchising 66,000 voters would be a violation of federal law. Griffin is working hard to push the matter up through the state courts, where he is likely to get a friendlier reception from his GOP colleagues in the majority at the Supreme Court, and where, as I understand it, Riggs, doing the right thing, has recused herself from this particular case. Writing last week at the North Carolina Newsline, the NAACP's state chapter president, Deborah Dix Maxwell, offers another aspect of all of this madness. Writing, quote, "The basic principles of elections are pretty simple. Candidates and voters follow the relevant federal and state rules. Eligible voters cast ballots for their preferred candidates under those rules, and election officials count the votes. Whoever gets the most votes wins. Because Griffin got fewer votes, he lost. That's called democracy," she says. "In close elections, there are safeguards such as recounts to ensure election rules were followed properly. People can turn to the courts for help if any rules were broken." But she says that's not what Judge Griffin is asking for in his race. Having lost, he now wants a do-over of his election. Not just any do-over, but one under a different set of rules carefully crafted by his lawyers to ensure the outcome would come out in his favor. Maxwell writes, "This is unprecedented in modern-day elections. We at the NAACP North Carolina State Conference have never been granted any relief like that, even in cases where we proved that black voters' rights were violated." She goes on to describe just a few of those cases where do-over elections were decidedly not granted, even when voting rights for tens of thousands of North Carolinians were proven by courts of law to have been violated both after and even before those elections. Deborah Dix Maxwell, as noted, is the president of the North Carolina State Conference of the NAACP and the first female president in North Carolina NAACP history. Deborah Dix Maxwell, thank you so much for joining us today on the broadcast.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. You cite a number of elections, recent ones, in fact, where voters, specifically black voters, were denied rights in critical elections. Elections, in fact, that affected the entire country, since some of them were congressional elections. But I want to step through some of those to underscore how outrageous all of this is and Griffin's attempt to really steal a seat on the Supreme Court, where Republicans already have a supermajority. But since this mess has been going on for a while, first, is there anything of note that I missed in my attempt to summarize the past almost 3 months of legal wrangling there? And what is the current status of the case in both federal and state courts right now?
Well, what I think I didn't hear you say is that when they did the recount, mm-hmm. there were over 700 votes in favor of Judge Riggs.
Mm-hmm.
Which Judge Griffin is refusing to concede and accept,
mm-hmm.
since he has friends on the, as you said, the North Carolina State Supreme Court. Friday, in Wake County Superior Court, the judge ruled against him.
Mm-hmm.
So his options are, as you stated, the state supreme or federal at this time. And so I believe he is filed. I'll have to check. It's been a hectic week for me.
Uh-huh.
But if you respect the results, Judge Griffin should concede. But because he feels that the results don't matter, what I want matters, that's sending the wrong message to thousands of voters, not only in this state, but across the country.
Is there anything that you see to Griffin's claims that 66,000 votes were cast unlawfully in the November elections? And by the way, if so, if that is the case, wouldn't that affect a whole bunch of other races that were run in the state in November?
And you see no one else is contesting.
Right.
While everyone else lost, primarily in the Council of State in North Carolina, you do not hear that question. It is only in this case, which should not even be a case at this time. The last Supreme Court, the justice lost Sherry Beasley by 400-something votes,
mm-hmm.
and she conceded to Judge Newby, who was now on the seat now.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not happening with Judge Griffin.
I understand that he was simply hoping to toss out the votes from those 66,000 voters, but is there any way to actually tie their votes to the ballots at this point? To do that, the state would have to simply run another election entirely, right? Because we don't know how those 66,000 voters voted, do we?
No, we don't. And those voters are black, white, of all ethnicities. A number of them are coming up saying, why is my ballot on this list? We have members who are informing us. And then in court Friday, it was found out that half of that number have been validated. And to accuse those who are overseas of military, which I am ex-military,
mm-hmm.
is not a fair thing to do. You're fighting for your country, and then this person is deciding that your vote does not count.
So there was no, I know that North Carolina, after a few tries of putting in disenfranchising photo ID restrictions, finally was able to get a photo ID law through. But mm-hmm. was it a matter of not informing overseas voters or members of the military, or was that just not specified in advance of the election that they were supposed to just know that they were supposed to send a copy of their photo ID or something?
I think that they did not. Remember, I'm not an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen an absentee ballot, and it asks for you to provide that proof, which is a disadvantage and discriminatory because everyone does not have a printer in their house,
mm-hmm.
and every place will not allow you to print ballot ID that are public places.
Right.
And these people who were born overseas, yep. or whatever the case may be, were allowed to send theirs in. That had been the standard, and now it's not being allowed at this time.
Now, my understanding is that many of these voters that Griffin is identifying as, for example, not having a driver's license on the or their last four, their social security number on their voter registration, that they actually did have that information on their registration form, but due to clerical errors, no fault of the voters, it didn't show up on their record. Is that right?
That's correct. And that is not the voter's fault. That's a clerical error through the state or the local board of elections, because they will ask you to show ID when you vote, which I do every time now.
You also cite at NC Newsline several elections where courts determined that, in fact, laws had been violated and voters disenfranchised, in particular Black voters. I believe we covered a lot of those elections on this program, Deborah Maxwell, going back to the early 20-teens, more recently in 2022. But tell me about those elections in which, despite proven laws proven to have been violated, those minority voters did not enjoy a so-called do-over election, as Judge Griffin is seeking here.
They did not enjoy a do-over because of the gerrymandering by the General Assembly of stacking and packing Black votes in the fewer districts. There was less representation for people of color at the legislative level, and that did not change. Some of that is still, you know, apparent.
Mm-hmm.
And so that causes a problem because you vote, but you don't receive representation in your area. That's why some counties have been split to dilute the vote of the Black individual, which is not fair, because that representative or senator is not representing the best interests of that community, because they're representing split counties and communities, which each one may be different.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I live in an industrial suburb town, the county beside me is suburban in a bedroom community to where I live. Different issues, different interests.
You write one example in the 2016 primary election. North Carolina enforced a voter ID requirement. It was later deemed illegal because it targeted Black voters with, quote, almost surgical precision. And yet the election was run under those rules anyway. Did y'all get a do-over election after that was determined by the courts?
I do not believe we did. I was not state president at that time, just fighting on the battlefield.
Uh-huh.
And it's hard in North Carolina because of the gerrymandering. If the areas were determined by the numbers and the population, it would be an equitable site.
Mm-hmm.
But people put politics over people in North Carolina too many times. Instead of citing what the people need, they decide to use their political persuasion and not always do things that are correct in this state.
There was also the case in 2022 when Black voters in Alabama were told that it was just too close to the election to fix congressional districts that were found to have violated their right to equal voting power under the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So we knew that people were being disenfranchised even before the election, but I guess the Supreme Court and their so-called Purcell principle, where they say, well, yeah, maybe people will be disenfranchised, but it's too close to the election to change the laws, before the election. They seem to do that when they feel like it. One of the cases was, again, in North Carolina, but the election wasn't delayed and there was no do-over right after it. So I guess, but that's what Griffin is now asking for, just a new election.
And that would send seismic waves through this county and through this state and even through the country to ask for a do-over when you numerically have 760 people through the recount that gives Judge Riggs the win. When you have about exhausted every resource, concede, respect the results. Right now, we are waiting on results of a federal voter ID trial that we went to in May.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it is February, and we're still waiting on the outcome.
But of course, if you win that one and the photo ID law in North Carolina is thrown out again, I guess we'll all be asking for a do-over election for last November's election, right?
Not all of us. Maybe some will, but yeah. they just have to understand. In every election, there is a winner, there is a loser, and then there's the need to be gracious in your concession when one loses. And we do not have that gracefulness in him conceding that it is over.
I mentioned during my intro that it seemed as if this challenge by Judge Griffin was ripped from the pages of the Donald Trump playbook. He came up with this claim very quickly, as if it had been created in advance, potentially for Donald Trump. Do you have any sense that that is the case there?
It might be, because we anticipated a flurry of controversy, but the results did not render that, unfortunately.
I believe the last that I read, Deborah Dix Maxwell, was that the federal appeals court, where Justice Riggs would like the case to proceed because she thinks that, you know, tossing out these votes would be a clear violation of federal law, that federal appeals court had said that the state court should handle it for now. But if votes were actually tossed, that the plaintiffs would be welcome to come back to federal court, have another crack at it. I'm wondering if I'm understanding it correctly, and if it were to reach the state Supreme Court, as Judge Griffin hopes, do you believe that Griffin's Republican colleagues on the majority there would simply rule in his favor here?
Unfortunately, I think that they might, instead of looking at the numerical aspects of it, mm-hmm. and that is sending a death knell, because that decreases voter participation. Why should I vote when they're just going to call it how they want it? Mm-hmm. Especially as we're gathering thousands of those people who are on that 60,000 list. One of my chairs in the NAACP told me, I'm on that list. You know, we know people who are on there who are very upset that they were disenfranchised and called out, that their vote didn't matter.
I got to tell you, Deborah, I've been covering elections for a couple of decades now, and I've never seen something like this. I've seen people try it, but it's, you know, shut down very quickly. The fact that the Supreme Court, they seem to go along with this, right? Has Justice Riggs actually been seated on the court in this new term? Is she participating in cases that, you know, other cases that she's not recused from?
Not to my knowledge, but this is the same court that tried to put a gag on the other female in the court, Justice Anita, mm-hmm. last year. So this court is special, that North Carolina State Supreme Court.
Well, special is a very nice way to put it.
Yeah.
Deborah Dix Maxwell is the president of the North Carolina State Conference of the NAACP, the first female president there. She also, as she noted, is a veteran of Desert Storm and the Army Reserves. And she also is on the board of the Cape Fear River Watch and the North Carolina League of Conservation Voters. Thank you for that work as well. Deborah, we will hope to be in touch in the days ahead as this moves forward, hopefully in a positive way. If it does, you probably won't hear from us. If it doesn't, we may be calling you. You can check out their work and what they do at the North Carolina NAACP at ncnaacp.org and on the Twitters at ncnaacp. You can also find Deborah now on the Blue Skies, where she is Peace ILM. She's just getting started over there, so go ahead and give her a few follows, will you? That'll help. Deborah Dix Maxwell, thank you for joining us today on the broadcast.
Thank you.
Okay, a couple of breaking news items, by the way.
But first, I had just one quick thought. Something that President Maxwell had said. She said that if the North Carolina Republican majority on the state Supreme Court goes ahead and rules for the Republican challenger Griffin, mm-hmm. that will, she said, quote, be a death knell for voter participation. And it just struck me because, of course, that is actually a feature of what Republicans are trying to do there. This is their goal. Their goal is to depress voter turnout. So because, they know that when voters turn out in larger numbers, they tend to lose. Republicans tend to lose.
Yeah. I mean, it's so important in so many ways, that election. I know it's a local election. It's a state in any event.
Yeah.
It hasn't gotten a lot of attention, of course, with everything else, all of the other nightmares going on. But it is really important because it will send the message not only to voters, don't bother, but also to other states. Hey, try the same thing.
Yeah.
Steal elections right before our very eyes. As long as you got the majority on your state Supreme Court, you can get away with it. Well, we'll see if they get away with it or not. I mentioned one point that I wasn't able to get to earlier today, Tulsi Gabbard, who's wildly unqualified with absolutely no experience in the intelligence community whatsoever, former Democrat turned Republican. She has now been confirmed by the Republicans in the U.S. Senate to become the next Director of National Intelligence.
Whew.
Also, while I was speaking there with Deborah Dix Maxwell, it looks like Donald Trump has finally gotten a win in court. CNN is alerting in a win for the Trump administration, a judge is allowing the federal worker so-called buyout program to go forward, at least for the moment. So Donald Trump gets on the board in court. We'll see how long that stands, that attempt to essentially gut the entire federal workforce with the promise of like 8 months of salary or something, even though Congress has not allocated the money to pay for that, which seems to be illegal.
He has a court ruling, but it's not clear if he will ever pay those people. So I think, as previous guests on this show have recommended, if you are a federal worker, to speak with your attorney and be very careful about what choices you make before accepting this, what may or may not be an actually legitimate so-called buyout offer.
Yep. Not that Donald Trump would rip off anybody that he made an offer to. That's not like
him. Like, he never pays
people. No, he would not do that. All right. We got to get out. Thanks again to my guest today, Deborah Dix Maxwell of the North Carolina NAACP, to Desi Doyen, our producer, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It is always greatly appreciated, especially amid winter storms on both the East and West Coast. So hopefully we are your radio home companion. You can find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at The Brad Blog. Hopefully you can find me at bradblog.com, which, as I said, was down earlier today. It is back up now. So if you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it from there anytime for free. Thanks to those of you who hit one of those donate buttons over there to help us, well, apparently upgrade our server. Or you can go straight to bradblog.com/donate. Thank you in advance. Drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. That is it. We will see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.